Doesn't that sound good? How do you know how not to mess up? What's the key about not messing up? How do you manage to make those decisions where you don't regret them afterwards? Isn't that something exciting to know? That we've got the answer? I've got the answer. This is like self-help stuff. I've got the answer. But this is one of our series. And the first of the series was, life hack number one was focus on who, not just what. Life hack two was find a mentor. And life hack number three, here we go, is find a small group who will help you make good decisions. That's find a small group who will help you make good decisions. That's the life hack for this evening. Now, I've made millions of decisions in my life already. All of us make millions of decisions every year. Some we make ourselves, others get made for us. But sitting in these seats now, we are a sum of all the decisions that we've ever made, a sum of all the decisions that have been made for us. That is who we are right now, right at this very point. And for me, originally, I'm not from Bristol. You can tell I don't have a Bristol accent. Originally, I'm from Guildford. I'm from Guildford in Surrey, where I was failing at school all the time. Failing at school, I was about 10, 11. I would often leave school crying because I just couldn't get it. I would often end up in the medical room just because I couldn't hack the lessons. I just didn't get it. And eventually my parents thought, we probably need to do something about this. And they got me assessed for dyslexia, where they found out I was very heavily, heavily dyslexic. And they made the decision to put me into a specialist dyslexic school, where I got taught very differently to how I was getting taught in mainstream school. And this made all the difference, all the difference. I never thought I'd make it to university. I never thought I'd make it there. But I went to university in Brighton, studied product design technology, and there wasn't a single exam paper anywhere in sight. Nothing. Fantastic. I was doing go-karts with motorbike engines and stuff like that. So much fun. And it was perfect for me. And I never thought I'd have a career in engineering, but now I work at Dyson in their NPI environmental product area. This is all the early concept stuff, all the new products, all the new testing, all the new tech. And that's where I'm working, where I've been for the last five-ish years. I never thought I'd make it. And then I came to Bristol for that job, and I met my now wife, Claire, who hopefully you'll come and meet at the end when we do newcomers. And now I'm married, I've got a kid on the way, due December the 6th. And the plan is, I'm going to try and make this a plan, is to coax it out soon enough so that it will be Jesus in the Christmas carol service here at Metro. You only get one shot at that with each kid. So I'm just trying to, I've figured out, anyone got any advice? Let's see if we can make that happen. But I'm really struggling with one massive decision at the moment. Massive, massive decision. It keeps me up at night. I think about it all the time. I can't get it out of my head. When I'm at work, I'm thinking about it. And it's really getting on my mind and just won't go away. Now, I am a massive car guy. I'm a huge car guy. Anyone that knows me would say, I like my cars. They're the first thing in my mind. I was the kid, when I was younger, who had the Saxo VTR, the bean can exhaust, the massive subs. You couldn't see out your wind mirrors or anything because they're all vibrating. They were totally useless. And you were annoying everyone around me. And actually, I quite liked that. That was quite good fun. Even now, I've got a stripped out Nissan, which is in the garage, about to go back on the road again. Very antisocial. These are the sorts of cars which I love. But I've realised that I've now got to get a family car. I've got to get a people carrier. And that sounds incredibly dull, incredibly boring to drive. And what are my mates going to think? I turn up in like a Citroen Picasso. Nothing wrong with that, just not for me. And they're going to laugh at me. You're normally in these sorts of cars. Why have you suddenly got this? Massive, massive decision for me. And for many of you here, you've probably got big decisions to make at the moment, small decisions. Maybe some people here are trying to figure out how much debt you can manage when you want to get on the housing ladder. How much of a mortgage can I accept now that will still suit me in the future? Or maybe you've just finished school and you're trying to think of whether I should go to university and if so, which one, whether I should do an apprenticeship or whether I should just go straight into part-time work. Maybe you've got a girlfriend at the moment and thinking about whether to get married or not, or whether you've just got to university, it's your first year and you've got 1 hour's worth of lectures a week and loads of free time, and you've got to decide what to do with it, what societies to join. How wisely can I use my time that I've got now, all this sudden freedom. Now, the Bible, whether you are a Christian or not, gives you so many of these little life hacks, these little things which make a big difference. And it's just up to us to apply it. Apply it and find out. Actually see, yes, it does make a difference when I actually read it and apply it. And we're looking at how to make good decisions. Now, this evening, we're in 1 Kings 12. We're looking at a guy called Rehoboam. He's the son of King Solomon. Now, I never really heard of Rehoboam when I got asked to do this, but I found out actually he is such a good image for how not to make a decision. A fantastic image of things that he does well and things that he doesn't do quite so well. Now, the time period that we're in is about 900 years before Jesus. And King Solomon's city, his empire, is so vast that its silver is as nothing. Silver is no value whatsoever. You kick it to the side of the curb. It's totally pointless having it. There's so much of it. The biggest, most famous, grandest empire ever. Solomon's well known for being the wisest man who ever lived. People would come to him to hear his wisdom. The Queen of Sheba was one that came to him to understand his wisdom, to get his insight into a situation. But his kingdom was basically built on hard slave labor, pretty much. He had about 150,000 forced slaves in his kingdom, breaking rock every day, cutting down trees, building his empire. A massive amount of forced labor. It sort of boggles the mind. We don't really think about those sorts of numbers nowadays. And we come to the story where King Solomon has just died. And his son, who is now 40-ish, Rehoboam, is now coming to the throne. And we see in 1 Kings 12, it says, Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had gone there to make him king. When Jeroboam, son of Nebat, heard this. Now, Jeroboam is an employed worker of King Solomon. I got them confused originally, but that is, we've got Rehoboam, who is a son, and Jeroboam, who's just an employed servant. Where he had fled from King Solomon, he returned from Egypt. So they sent for Jeroboam, and he and the whole assembly of Israel went to Rehoboam and said to him, "Your father put a heavy yoke on us, but now lighten the harsh labor and the heavy yoke he put on us, and we will serve you." Rehoboam answered, "Go away for 3 days and come back to me." So the people went away. They ask him something new. This is a new king. This is a fresh start. We often act like that when we get a new parliament in, doesn't it? We want something new. We want something different. We want to live differently. And these guys who have been under this heavy burden all this time just want a bit less work. They don't even say, "We won't do any work." They'll say, "Just lighten the load for us." And he does something incredibly wise. He said, "Okay, go away for 3 days. Go away for 3 days. Give me some time. Give me some time away from this. Don't make me make that snap decision, which can often be so wrong." And maybe for some of us here, that is exactly what we need to do with the decisions that we're facing today. To take some time out from it totally. Give ourselves a break from what's going on in our mind, trying to figure out what to do, and come back to it afresh after seeing it from a different viewpoint. Now, he does something very wise again, Rehoboam. He seeks the counsel of the correct people. He seeks the counsel of the elders, and we'll see that here now. Then King Rehoboam consulted the elders who had served his father Solomon during his lifetime. "How would you advise me to answer these people?" he asked. They replied, "If today you'll be a servant to these people and serve them and give them a favorable answer, they will always be your servants." Very wise and measured words. These people have served under King Solomon, remember? They've already known how to run a kingdom. They've seen it done well. They've seen it done badly. They know how to make these decisions. They know how to run the people. This is the first time he's become king, and he probably doesn't quite know this exactly. And look at the advice they give. It gives a long-term benefit. If he can just do this one small thing, serve first, then they will serve you your whole kingship. If you can just serve them once and put them before yourself in this one little situation, then they will serve you for the rest of your kingship. That's probably what he always dreamed of when he was a kid. Serving all the way through, having his people to serve for his whole lifetime when he became king. This would give him that dream. This would give him that ambition that he had. We've all got ambitions. And what decision is going to make us get there, and what is going to make us fall from that? Now, also note that Rehoboam asks it in the person, doesn't he? He asks it, he owns the question. He goes, how should I answer it? This is my question to answer. You're not answering it, I'm answering it. I just need your advice. You're not king, I don't pay you. I just want your advice, and I will make the final decision, and I will own this. And the language that they use is very metered. It's not harsh. It's very metered, very gentle, very thought out. But we see that Rehoboam rejects this. But Rehoboam rejected the advice the elders gave him and consulted the young men who had grown up with him and were serving him. He asked them, "What is your advice? How should we answer these people who say to me, 'Lighten the yoke your father put on us'?" The young men who had grown up with him replied, "These people have said to you, 'Your father put a heavy yoke on us, but make our yoke lighter.' Now tell them, 'My little finger is thicker than my father's waist. My father laid on you a heavy yoke. I will make it even heavier. My father beat you with whips, and I will beat you with scorpions.'" Now, a scorpion is not the little creature. I would have picked scorpions over whips, but scorpions is actually another form of whip, a pretty nasty one. So it's a whip also, pretty painful. Now, look at the difference in the answer between the two groups. He's gone to his friends now. He's grown up with them. They've probably played in the dirt when they were younger. They probably know each other's parents quite well. They've known each other's secrets. They've grown up, they've enjoyed time together. They shared life with each other. They've heard Rehoboam talking about, "Oh, when I've been king, it's going to be great, and you guys are going to come with me. When I'm a king, I want to rule like that." They know him, and they know each other. They know what buttons to press. They know how he wants to hear the response. They know all of that. And also look at how they answer it. The words are quite harsh and brash and just pretty aggressive, really. And what it gives, it doesn't give a long-term benefit like the elders' advice does. It gives the instant satisfaction, "I'm in power, no, you do what I say." And that's quite common for us in today's culture, isn't it? We want everything now. We don't want to have to wait for it. We want everything now on our doorstep straight away. I don't want to have to wait for anything. And actually, this doesn't give him his dream at the end of the day. This gives him that quick satisfaction. And even look at how we ask the question. He no longer owns it, does he? He no longer owns the question. He's gone from asking, "How should I answer it?" to "How should we answer it? We are in this together. We are going up the ladder. What dreams do you have?" And put that into this answer. And they fed in the answer that he wanted to hear, that they all wanted to hear. They all wanted to go up the ladder as quickly as possible. Now, this is where it's interesting to see friends and what we count as friends. Thanks to Facebook and all our internet social stuff, we think that we've got thousands and thousands of friends. Thousands of friends. I've probably got maybe 2,000 friends. I don't know. You could probably beat me. But really, they're not your friends at all, really. I think you've probably got about three categories of friends. And the first one is acquaintances. Acquaintances. These are people who you know something about. You might have bumped into them in a pub one day. You might have met them in a club or them in a club somewhere. Or you sort of recognise their face, but you can't remember quite where from. And maybe they're the sort of person who gets culled in the yearly Facebook cull and you cut them out, or says happy birthday and you don't even know who it is. That's an acquaintance. And then we come into friends. These are people that you hang out with quite a lot of time. These are people who know you well. You hang out, you'll watch films together, you'll have a good time. They know you, you know them. You share a bit of life with them. You go down to the pub with them. These are people that you enjoy hanging out with. Friends, that's the majority. And then the third category, this is your close, inner circle friends. These are people who see you past that mask that you show to everybody else. They see the real you. They see the decisions that you're making. They see your heart opening more than it is to others. They have more influence on you than everybody else. And it's up to us, really, who's in that circle. Because in that circle, they have most influence. And you need to choose who's going to be advising you on that close level. Not everyone has that access to you or should have that access to you. Be precious about who is actually close to you and helping you make those decisions. We see this even in Jesus. He had a sort of circle of friends. He knew thousands of faces. He had tons of people following him all the time. But he had a closer friendship circle of 12. And then an inner circle of three, Peter, James, and John. And then you could argue he had an inner circle of one. Granted, the information went the other way from Jesus out. But he had different levels of interaction and access to himself. And that's what we need to all remember with our friends, that actually we need to protect this inner circle of friends, because our decisions, remember, add up to who we are. If you've got a goal, you need to make sure you are getting the right decisions made on the right information. But how does Rehoboam fare after this? We'll see how he answers now. 3 days later, Jeroboam and all the people returned to Rehoboam, as the king had said, "Come back to me in 3 days." The king answered the people harshly, rejecting the advice given him by the elders. He followed the advice of the young men and said, "My father made your yoke heavy. I will make it even heavier. My father beat you with whips, and I will beat you with scorpions." So the king did not listen to the people, for this turn of events was from the Lord, to fulfill the word the Lord had spoken to Jeroboam, son of Nebat, through Ahijah the Shunite. When all Israel saw that the king refused to listen to them, they answered the king, "What share do we have in David? What part in Jesse's son? To your tents, Israel. Look after your own house, David." So the Israelites went home, but as for the Israelites who were living in the towns of Judah, Rehoboam still ruled over them. King Rehoboam sent out Adoniram, you'll see my dyslexia coming through there, who was in charge of the forced labor. But all Israel stoned him to death. King Rehoboam, however, managed to get into his chariot and escape to Jerusalem. So Israel has been in rebellion against the house of David to this day. When all the Israelites heard that Jeroboam had returned, they sent and called him to the assembly and made him king over Israel. Only the tribes of Judah remained loyal to the house of David. What happened? On this basis of one decision gone wrong, one decision where he went the wrong way, he lost everything he ever dreamed of having. He lost everything. It becomes a divided kingdom. He causes effectively a riot with his people. He loses their respect. He loses his kingship. He loses everything that he knew he was going to be getting for his whole life when he became king, based on the advice that he got given by his mates and chose to follow. So what's the big idea? What's the big idea? Well, the big idea is this. If you want to make good decisions, you need people who will tell you what you might not want to hear. If you want to make good decisions, you need people who will tell you what you might not want to hear. Now, Metro was starting up small groups or midweek groups where you can be with people who are your friends, similar life stage to you, or maybe further along, a real mixture. But people who maybe don't see life from quite the same way that you do and your mates do that you've grown up with. They see it from a different slide point. They might have a different piece of advice. And it's a great chance to be open with people and just get that different, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, that's a really good point. I'll need to rethink what I'm doing. Great chance for that. And if you want to get involved in those, You've got forms on your chairs. Fill them out and come find Claire and myself at the end. We'd love to tell you more about midweek groups. So plan who gives you advice. Rehoboam had a great choice of advice that he took at the beginning. Perfect. And then he went for his friends. But why did he go for his friends? Why is it easy to be like Rehoboam? Why is it easy to go for your friend's advice rather than the advice actually you should be following? Is it because we'd rather be loved in the then and now rather than actually get to where we want to go? Would we rather want the quick, yes, I've got friends, okay, they've told me to do this, yeah, well, I'm even happy, I want to not upset my mates, I'll go with their advice. Yeah, it's so easy to do that. I've been there so many times when I've gone down the wrong decision purely because I didn't want to go away from my mates and what they were saying me to do. So many times. And if you're not a Christian and going into sort of a midweek group just sounds a bit too crazy, a bit too out there, then go to Alpha. That was said about at the beginning. A great chance to be with people, similar life stages to you, similar questions. But another chance to be with people where they'll give you a different opinion to what you're probably used to. And a great chance to have your decisions challenged and better information given to you. Now, your decisions have made you who you are now, but your decisions in the future also create a legacy. They create a legacy. Can you look back on your decisions now, thinking back to what you've done, all the decisions you've made and had made for you, can you look back at every decision and go, yeah, that was good. I'm happy with that. I'm really chuffed with that decision. That was good. That was right. I'm really happy looking back. Can you say that about your whole legacy of decision making? Probably not. I can't. But there is a chance now to look forward and see, actually, I can have a great legacy of decision-making. We could live in a culture where no one really lives in more debt than they can handle. No one goes to the payday loan place anymore. They all close down. No one has credit cards because they're only spending what they have. There's no more broken relationships. And everyone's happy with getting to the job that they wanted to get to. Everyone's happy with where they're going and can look back and it's like, yes, that was great. And I'm happy with those decisions. Now, looking forward into your life, start to plan who's going to be giving you advice. You might have in your mind that decision which is going on currently, and you need to find someone very specific to give you that advice. Don't be scared to go away from your friends and go find something else and follow their advice instead. Let's be a people who live without making decisions that we end up regretting and live free of that and be happy with all the decisions that we've made and the decisions that we will make, and we always get our goals because we always make the right decisions. Let's not be like Rehoboam, who on that one decision lost everything he ever wanted or aspired to have. And like I said at the end, as the band come up now, we'd love to meet you at the end. If you're thinking about getting into small groups or want some advice about what they're like or some information about them, then come find Claire and myself at the end, and we'd love to spend some time with you, chatting to you about it and giving you some more information about that. Brilliant. Over to you, Matt.